Welcome to Lili Logic. My name is Lisa Smith Henderson, and Lili was my childhood nickname. It's my grandmother name, and it's the name that represents the real me. If you want to know more, you can go to LiliLogic.com. And I'm so excited. One of my dear friends, Jody Cole, is with me today. And Jody and I actually met in South Africa when I was living there. She has a house there. But she lives in the States, and we have formed a fond friendship through the years. And Jody does a whole bunch of things, but her vocation is as a safari leader. Do you call it that? What do you call it, Jody?
I'm a safari guide, trained and qualified safari guide, yes.
Okay. Yes, you're a leader too, but
yes,
that's a whole nother thing, Tony Robbins, Allah. So when we met, we didn't meet on safari, but I love hearing you talk about safari, and being with wild animals is one of my favorite things. So tell me, how did you discover this was your passion?
Well, when I was a girl, I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, and my mama's family had a large piece of land in southern Georgia that just happened to also be called a plantation, because that's what large pieces of land are. They're either farms or plantations, and the family called it a plantation. And then we also had an actual farm in Alabama that had cattle on it. And I was always given free rein to go out and to just to go. The land was big enough, and it's just what you do in the South. And at the Wildfire plantation, there was a bell at the house, and whenever you heard the bell, it was time to come in and eat. And you could hear it, the lay of the land, you could hear it far and wide. It was about 5,000 acres. So if you were 5,000 acres away from the house, of course, you wouldn't hear it. But if we were close enough, we could hear it. And so we just knew to go home. It's time to go home. And I guess in the South, it's just the way I grew up. You just be home in time for dinner. When you're in the city, you come home when the streetlights go on. And same thing at the farm in Alabama. And this is leading to the answer of your question. And that is that I spent so much time outside, and I had such a connection with outdoors, with outside, with everything. And whenever there was family drama going on, I would leave the house and just go outside. Even if I knew couldn't go far in that moment, I would go hide behind the boxwoods to just one hide from whatever was going on in the household. But then I'd just go out there and I'd just spend time, and there'd be like little roly polies in the sand, and sometimes there'd be spiders and insects back there. And I was never scared. That's good English. I was never scared of any of these things. I was more fascinated with them, and I literally had no problem just sticking my hand out and having something crawl on my hand, because I felt like we were kin. We were small and vulnerable, or small and precious. You fast forward that to having horses and playing outside and being athletic and the whole everything that goes with it. And my favorite story to tell, if you don't mind me taking a minute to tell you the story. My mama had cattle on the farm outside of Birmingham. And there was one bull, black bull with a white blaze across his forehead. That's a type of cow. Don't ask me what kind of anybody listening to this that knows their cows knows what that is. But he was black with a white spot in the middle of his head. And his name was Costco. And he was a big, gorgeous guy. And I don't remember what the cows looked like. I really wasn't that interested in them. I was about 8 years old, and I always went outside with a little backpack full of snacks and color books and coloring things. And I would go out and sit in the pasture with the cows. I'd go find the pasture. I mean, find the cows, and I'd go sit down with them, and I'd sing, and I'd pull a piece of grass and put it in my teeth like my dad did. And I'd sing and color. And, you know, I'd had a feeling it's time to go in and eat or something. And I'd go home. And one day, Mama Cat, she said, "Jody, where do you go every day?" And I said, "Oh, I go outside and I go color." She said, "Well, where do you go?" And I said, "Oh, I hang out with Costco and the cows." Her eyeballs went white. And I'm thinking, I don't know why, you know, this instantaneous child was just like, I don't know what I did wrong, but I was waiting for the hammer to fall. And she goes, "Josephine Condor's cold. Don't you ever do that again." And I'm thinking, Yes, ma'am. But why? But I grew up, you didn't ask questions. You just did what you were told. And I remember being so disappointed because I thought, you just don't understand this. I don't know where this is coming from because I kid you not. At first, when I walked up to the cows, they would look at me and they'd be munching with grass hanging out of their lips. I'd sit down and settle into my thing. And by the time it was time for me to go, which was just a sense, you know, when you play outside and spend that kind of time, you know, when it's time to go home, the cows would be all around me, and Costco would be one of the ones that was closest to me. And then I'd say, all right, I gotta go. And I'd collect my things and trot off back to the house. It was my first encounter with people being afraid of something that they feel they don't understand.
So was your mother afraid the bull was gonna like charge you?
And I think only animals only attack when they are conditioned to attack or when there's a legit threat involved. Well, in this case, there wasn't one, and my essence was nothing to be feel threatened by. So fast forward to that, to all, you know, summer camp and all the other things that I did. Also, this is a piece of my dream to go to Africa, is do you remember Alex Haley's miniseries called Roots?
Oh, yes.
I was the only member of my household, again, reminding you I'm from Alabama, Birmingham. I was the only member of my household who watched it. And I asked permission because I wasn't allowed to watch TV really at night unless I'd done all my homework. And I, of course, had to go to bed early and I begged to watch this thing. And Dad finally acquiesced, and it was Monday through Friday nights. And I sat there cross-legged in front of the TV, arm's length away from changing the channel should I need to. And I sat there and watched Kunta Kinte all the way to, quote, present day at the time. That was 1970 something. Now you're hearing my connection to animals, nature, wildlife, insects, being outside, then the connection to Black African people and the highly inappropriate, that's the politically way of putting it, treatment that they received upon arrive, well, being captured and then upon arriving here in the United States, especially the Southern United States.
And being enslaved, let's just
Yes, being
stay
enslaved.
true.
Yes. See, I spent too much time in California. I'm trying to be careful with my terminology here.
No, we don't speak the truth here, baby.
So I was given the opportunity, Lisa, to go to Africa when I was 35 years old. It was 19 early 90s. And it was a dare by a friend of mine to start living my life because some various things. My dad had died, my first dog as an adult had died, my girlfriend had dumped me. I mean, you know, let's just throw a few more things on the fire. And he called me up to ask me how I was doing. And basically, he said, after hearing all of this, he said, Jody Cole, promise me that you'll do something for me. And I said, well, okay, what? And he said, promise me that when we hang up the phone, you will make one decision and take an action on that one decision that's something that you've always wanted to do. And he said, please do it by next Thursday.
Oh, nice. A little deadline there.
And I don't know what it was in me, but the first thought that crossed my mind was, wow, you know, I've never been to Australia. And excuse me, I said it wrong. The first thing that occurred to me was to go to Africa. But the irony was, for some strange reason, I'd always wanted to go to Australia because, you know, I'm a Gemini and have to do things different than everybody else. And no one ever talked about Australia. So I was going to be the first one in the Cole family to go to Australia. Well, to this day, I still have not gone to Australia.
Oh.
So what I did is I hung up the phone. I promised him and I hung up the phone. I called Wilderness Travel in Berkeley, California, just across the bay, and made an appointment to go sit down with them. And I said, I'm bringing my checkbook. And I sat down and I put together a South Africa tour and then a tour to Tanzania, which included climbing Kilimanjaro. The metaphor was not lost on me, climbing a mountain, which is quite life-changing. And it did end up becoming quite transformative for me. And to this day, most everyone's ex familiar with the expression of that people come into your life for a reason, season, or a lifetime. Lisa, to this day, I cannot remember this man's name. I have no clue if he's still alive. And at the time when we were on the phone, he was full-blown AIDS and also a diabetic. I don't even remember his name. All I know is that he was influential enough on me to do that, drop that angel bomb on me, and it completely changed my life. Now I could go on and on about being on safari. What I'll say is that first trip when I got off the little prop plane camp called Chitwa Chitwa.
Oh,
That
yes.
was the first camp.
Very
And
fancy.
they had just had a gentle rain the night before. They opened the door to the plane. I was the first one to step on that top step on that, the 5 or 6 steps that get us on the ground. And I recognized the smell. I've never been to that continent before in my life. And I knew I.
I want to ask you, I had that same feeling. It was like almost like the human DNA recognizes this is where we are from. And
Yeah.
I'm white, you're white. I can't even imagine as a black person what it would be like. But it was like, oh, I'm home.
Yeah.
What do you think that is?
I agree with you 100%. I do believe that there's an ancient coding to our genes. This is going to sound a bit woo-woo, but maybe some of your listeners will totally agree with me, or at least sense of familiarity to what I'm about to say, is that not only do I believe that there's some sort of code encoding that is still in our DNA, but I also believe that our consciousness, when we listen, is the deepest knowing. And some people call that, and I hope you don't lose a listener, but some people call that God. Some people call that a knowing. Some people call that a spiritual experience. Yes to all of it. It's all of it. And for me, it was a knowing. It was a recognition of something. And in my opinion, and it sounds like you too, it was an ancient memory.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot explain it, and I fell in love with South Africa.
Yeah.
The beauty, I mean, it was difficult in a lot of ways, and you and I have talked about this. Being a white person growing up in the South
Yeah.
of the United States, and I'm older than you, but seeing the civil rights movement in action, and then going to South Africa and thinking, oh, apartheid. And only to discover that was not the case. Apartheid, in my opinion, has not ended. Legally, it ended, but psychically, psychologically, truthfully, hasn't ended. What, tell me your take on that, because you've actually spent a good deal more time there than I did.
Well,
Here's the thing, we're not being careful. We're being,
okay.
this is real.
I believe, well, apartheid isn't just a condition or a phenomenon in South Africa. It's a worldwide epidemic thing. I mean, you look at what's happening in Europe right now and what Biden is finished trying to help with it, a truce or a ceasefire. I can't remember what it is that they're doing. And then in the US, the color disparity. And then in South Africa just has a spotlight on it because it was such a huge thing. And Nelson Mandela, the amount of oppression there, but then Nelson Mandela's incarceration, and he knew it, was hugely important to making it a global thing. I mean, and then you look at what happened in Germany. So during World War and the racism and the Nazis and so on, it's the same. And I think it's a type of survivalism, but I'm getting into philosophy and what have you. At the end of the day, I always equate things to the fact that we're animals and we're trying to figure out a way to survive at our best and our healthiest and make sure we don't lose resources. Now, I have seen that what is really sad in South Africa is the disparity of wealth. The percentages are higher, much higher, sadly higher for Black African people in South Africa. And it hurts my heart. The politics are slightly shifting now in South Africa, and Cape Town is a lot like San Francisco.
Oh, it
It's a
is.
little more liberalized part of the country. And when I say liberal, it's not about gay rights and all that kind of stuff. It's about an equality type mindfulness.
Okay, well, all right. So we're acknowledging that there is a lot that is not cool about South Africa. There is a lot that is beautiful. And I remember going on safari, which had been a dream of mine since I was a kid. And the man I married was born in Zambia. And it had been a dream of his. And on our first date, he said, "We will go to Africa. I know some things, and this I know." And that was in 2002. 5 years later, I surprised him with a safari for his birthday. And it was the most life-changing thing I've ever experienced besides having a baby. And feeling like I'm with God. I'm sitting here with an elephant, but that's really God. And I want to hear what it was like for you when you first went out on that game drive vehicle in the wilds of Africa, in the bush, and you saw your first animal. And what was it? What was the first animal?
You're going to laugh. In fact, the guide that we had also laughed. So I'm on the steps of the plane coming off that first flight, get in the vehicle. And of course, they had a, what's Sabi?
A bull terrier?
Yes, they had a bull terrier that was on the back of the vehicle. And I was thinking, I am so at home. They've got a dog on the back of the vehicle. So that was my first African animal I saw, but I knew I was home. But then we, they load up all our luggage and the group of us, we start heading towards the lodge. And the first animal I see is a wildebeest. And I'm like, stop there. And he goes, "Well, don't worry, we'll see more." I'm like, no. I don't care if it is 6,000 feet away. I'm taking a picture. This is my first African animal. And I just was ecstatic, and I still have that ridiculous picture, and it is so not good, but who cares? It's my first animal. And I can say that you are like probably 45% of my guests, and every other guest talks. So being elephant, that the first thing that really felt like I'm in Africa, the elephant and the gentleness and how quiet they are and so on. The other, however, percentage it is say it's giraffe, the first animal that they see, to see how, again, how quiet it is and how smooth and what a beautiful walker, the steps it takes. And it's just so balanced and incredible, and that nature is actually so quiet.
And so perfect. Now, I will confess, my animal I wanted to see the most was a warthog. And the guide and the tracker were so relieved. They're like, "Oh, great. She didn't want to see a leopard." It's a war. I was beside myself with seeing a warthog in the wild. Like, that was it for me. Like, oh my God. So, when you take people on safari, how do you prepare? Do you tell them, like, I mean, what's your experience? What do most people find? And do you have people that do a checklist? Like, okay, well, I've already seen a wildebeest and a giraffe. Now I want to see an elephant and a lion.
Well, on day one, in the bush, out in the field, it's a free-for-all. I keep my mouth shut. And also, just to back up even more, on the I kind of they start getting an essence of who I am, a sense of who I am, and all the phone calls and emails that we have prior. So sometimes it takes a group, like my first group that I meet on February 1st, and we've been talking for 2 years, and we're going to see the gorillas, and then we're going to be in Rwanda, and then we're going to be in Tanzania. Three people on that trip have been with me before, so they know how I am on safari. The rest don't. So that first night at dinner, I will prepare everyone for how I work. And it's all for them. It has nothing to do with me, although there is a sense of satisfaction that comes from it, but it's more about how I hope that they will experience safari. And I tell them, we're going to let Africa be Africa. We're going to let nature be nature. And we're going to do everything we can to tick everything on the list. And let me know now if there's something in particular, if we haven't already discussed it, that you really want me to see. And we will do everything we can to either get nature to comply, or we will figure out a way to make that happen. But there's no guarantee, because remember, they're just living their lives. So the tone is set. And day one is, like I said, is a free for all. We'll just drive around, see everything, take pictures. I don't mention a word of like put the camera down. I don't do anything like that because I know what it was like for me. I had to take the wildebeest 6,000 feet away. So then day two at breakfast or loading up in the vehicle, and this group will be in two separate vehicles. But while we're together, I'll say, do what you can, take the picture because I don't want you to miss the shot. And somebody's bound to bring, speaking of 6,000, the 6,000 millimeter lens, you know, it's just someone's going to have the camera. I know it. When you see the shot, take the shot. Then put your camera down. I want to urge you to use all of your senses. Can you smell something? Can you hear something? And listen to the nuances. Listen to the communication because the communication, especially through wildebeest and elephants, it's almost inaudible. Then when we're around lions, if we're lucky enough to be around lions, it's almost inaudible oomph. But you'll hear it if you're listening. And I ask them to not speak when the car is still. If we're walking, I mean, if we're driving,
God bless you. I
talk.
love that.
And within the second, by the end of the second day, everybody starts to get it. Some, not everybody, that's a lie, because I have had some people that just blah, blah the whole time, because that's what they do as a nervous thing. And I get it. I understand how some people, you know, it's a pacifying thing to talk a lot. So being on safari isn't the experience you have after you come home. Being on safari is the experience you're having in the moment, and you're allowing your body and your mind and your heart to have the experience so that it never leaves you. I mean, look at what's happening in LA right now, and you know, bless all the people who are affected by it. Memories and photographs are all gone now.
Yeah, so you have
Gone.
to have in that moment, you have to sear it in your memory.
Yes. And using your body to do that.
Oh, this makes so much sense just to really capture the memory rather than be focused on taking pictures. We're talking to Jody Cole, the owner of Wild African Rainbow Safaris, and the website is wildrainbowsafaris.com. So you can find out how to get a hold of Jody. If you want to book a trip, she's off to see the gorillas, and we're going to talk about that in our next episode. So thanks for joining us today for Lili Logic. You can go to wildrainbowsafaris.com to learn more, and you can go to lililogic.com to find out more about us. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.